Good morning and welcome to this presentation of the full year result for Infigen Energy for the year ended 30th of June 2015, and apologies for the slight delay. I'm Miles George, the Managing Director of Infigen Energy, and joining me today to present the result is Chris Bavistock, our Chief Financial Officer. The agenda for this presentation is set out on slide two of the pack that was released with our result this morning. I'll briefly address the key outcomes and the operational performance outlined in the early slides, followed by Chris, who will present the group's financial performance. I will then provide a brief update on the outlook for the business. Following the presentation, we'll then open the line for questions. Turning to slide four, which outlines the key outcomes for the FY 2015 financial year. On 26th of June 2015, we signed an agreement to sell substantially all of our U.S. solar development pipeline to SunPower. The transaction completed in late 2015. Infigen will receive net cash proceeds after tax of $29.5 million from the sale, with the majority of those proceeds to be received in November 2015. We ran a competitive sale process for our U.S. wind business during the year, and on 15 July, we signed agreements to sell that business to ArcLight. The sale price of approximately $272.5 million for the Class A and Class B interests includes net proceeds of $40.5 million for Infigen's Class A cash flow interests. Australian operating costs of $34.7 million for the year were below the guidance range of $36 million-$38 million, due in part to lower costs related to lower production, but also due to careful ongoing management of costs in the business. During the year, we negotiated and entered into a joint development agreement with a leading turbine supplier in relation to the Budangaroo and Forsyth wind farm developments. The turbine supplier, who does not wish to be identified at this time, acquired options to purchase 50% equity interests in those wind farm developments. During the year, Infigen co-developed and implemented a new wind risk production hedge with Swiss Re to manage cash flow and earnings volatility associated with its Australian wind farms. Consistent with our focus for the last few years, we continued to reduce borrowings, including repaying $61.5 million of global facility borrowings and $4.6 million of Woodlawn project finance facility borrowings. In addition, we will repay approximately 25% of the global facility debt, along with associated interest rate swaps on completing the sale of the U.S. wind business in FY 2016. Infigen dedicated a lot of time and resource in FY 2015 in debate and negotiations that moderated the reduction in the large-scale renewable energy target and restored legislative certainty for the renewable energy industry in Australia. Moving now to slide five, I'd like to describe how the sale of the U.S. wind business and U.S. solar development pipeline will positively affect the remaining Australian business. As I mentioned, the sale of the U.S. business will significantly reduce our borrowings, though we remain relatively highly geared for our mix of contracted and uncontracted assets. A sale will also uncouple the Australian assets from the U.S. assets, thereby eliminating exposure to the U.S. cash flow dip. This, in turn, improves the outlook for maintaining global facility covenant compliance because the U.S. business was not going to meaningfully contribute to the covenant EBITDA measure in the medium term. The sale increases the resilience of the remaining business with proceeds from U.S. solar development and U.S. Class A interests to increase excluded company, that is non-global facility borrower group cash, by approximately $95 million to approximately $125 million. Our residual business will be less complex as the US tax equity structures and their complex accounting, cash management, and associated reporting of Class A and Class B interests are eliminated. In addition to the reduction in global facility borrowings, the Union Bank debt and Class A liabilities will come off the balance sheet, and approximately US$25 million of interest rate swaps will be paid out at closing. These changes will improve the options for the Australian business. Infogen's development pipeline is well placed to participate in opportunities arising from the legislated amended renewable energy targets in Australia. During FY16, Infogen will assess its best opportunities to deploy its cash resources to achieve profitable growth and to improve total security holder returns. Turning to slide 6, the US wind business and US solar development assets are reported as discontinued operations at 30th of June 2015. Accordingly, the comparative consolidated statements of comprehensive income have been re-presented to show the discontinued operations separately from continuing operations. I'm very pleased to report that we achieved our safety goal of zero lost time incidents and injuries in our business on a rolling 12-month basis. Production decreased 7%, or 113 gigawatt hours, to 1,459 gigawatt hours due to poor wind conditions at all sites except Alinta, and to a much lesser extent lower availability, primarily related to network losses. Infogen reported a net loss after tax for the year of $303.6 million, which was $294.7 million higher than the prior year. Loss from continuing operations before tax was $18.2 million, a $17.7 million favourable variance to the prior corresponding period due to lower borrowing costs and termination of interest rate swaps in the prior period. The loss from discontinued operations was $285.2 million, a $308.7 million unfavourable variance to the prior period, primarily due to a $284.5 million impairment of the US business following its reclassification to being held for sale, and $32.3 million from interest rate swaps that are no longer hedge accounted due to the US wind business being held for sale, partly offset by the gain on disposal of the US solar development pipeline. The rest of this slide provides a summary of key profit and loss and cash flow measures that Chris and I will cover in more detail in subsequent slides. Moving on then to slide 8, revenue decreased $11.6 million or 8%. To $133.8 million as a result of lower production and lower electricity prices, partially offset by higher LGC revenue, which included incremental revenue recognised for the sale of inventory at prices above their carrying value and a small amount of compensated and other revenue. Moving on to slide 9, during FY15, Infogen's Australian wind turbines were covered by original equipment manufacturer's warranties, Suzlon, or post-warranty service and maintenance agreements for Suzlon and Vestas. This contributed to the stability and predictability of wind farm costs. Australian operating costs decreased $1.4 million or 4% to $34.7 million, below the guidance range of $36 to $38 million, with the key variances being the lower balance of plant costs during the year and cost saving in asset management after allowing for the revised direct costing of energy market activities. Turbine O&M costs were relatively steady in aggregate, but they included a part year of higher contractual costs at the Capital Wind Farm, which transitioned onto a post-warranty service and maintenance agreement during the year. This was offset by lower costs that resulted from lower production. Moving on to slide 10, this slide brings the revenue and cost factors together, and as you can see from the chart, this year's operating EBITDA outcome of $99.1 million is down 9% or $10.2 million, principally related to a poor wind year. I'll now hand over to Chris Bavistock, our Chief Financial Officer, to discuss the group's financial performance.
Thanks, Miles. As Miles has already noted, the announced sale of our US business and its classification for our FY15 accounts as held for sale discontinued operations results in much less complex financial accounting and reporting. The benefits of this should be seen throughout the financial review presentation, which focuses, as you would expect, on continuing operations with comparatives restated onto that basis. Turning to slide 12 and starting with EBITDA, which was down 10% or $9.1 million, reflecting lower operating EBITDA, slightly offset by lower corporate and development costs. Corporate costs were $13.6 million, down 2% or 0.3 of a million, while development costs were $2 million, down 29% or 0.8 million due to lower indirect costs. Below the EBITDA level, the principal observations are: net borrowing costs were $55.3 million, down 5% or $2.8 million. A lower debt balance as at 30 June 2015 compared to the PCP, reduced interest expense by $1.7 million, and bank fees and loan costs were $1.4 million lower. This was partially offset by $0.3 million lower interest income from lower cash balances during the year. Net FX and revaluation of derivatives were $8 million, up $9 million, due to $4.6 million higher FX gains and $4.4 million higher fair value gains on financial instruments, principally arising from a USD FX option that matured during the year. Interest rate swap termination costs of $16.8 million in the PCP were recorded as a significant item. Income tax expense of $0.2 million was $3.7 million lower than the $3.5 million income tax benefit in the PCP due to an improved before-tax result from the Australian continuing operations. Miles has already provided the net outcomes from the continuing business and discontinued business, so I'll now move to slide 13 and the operating cash flow. This slide sets out the movement from operating EBITDA to net operating cash flow. The reduction in operating EBITDA has already been covered. The positive working capital movement was principally related to the sale of LGCs from inventory, with cash costs for corporate and development largely in line with the P&L amount. Financing costs delivered a benefit due to the swap closeout in the PCP. Turning to slide 14, which reconciles the cash balance movement during the year. Cash inflows for the year included operating cash flow from continuing operations of $33.2 million and cash flow from discontinued operations of $20.2 million. Other cash movements included $66.1 million for debt repayments, $10.5 million for US solar development, and $1.1 million for property, plant and equipment capex. Expenditure on PP&E included IT costs associated with financial and reporting system upgrades and wind farm-related capital expenditure. The Global Facility Borrow Group cash reserves at 30 June 2014 included $11.2 million. The equivalent cash reserves form part of the discontinued operations asset at balance date. The $26.8 million reduction in excluded companies' cash to $34.2 million from $61 million is primarily due to $14.5 million distribution from excluded companies to the Global Facility Borrow Group to support global facility covenant compliance, and capex related to the US solar development pipeline, with the latter more than recouped from the sale proceeds of the pipeline to be received at FY16. Turning to slide 15. This slide sets out the impact of FX on the principal balance sheet items. The key takeout from this is the 23% depreciation of the Australian dollar against the US dollar and minor adverse movements against the euro, increased US and euro borrowings in AUD terms by 76.2 million. Infogen intends on holding US dollars and existing euro cash balances when proceeds from the US transactions are received to somewhat ameliorate this FX exposure going forward. Turning to slide 16, this gives the balance sheet at 30 June 2015 and 30 June 2014. The principal features are reductions in PP&E, goodwill and intangible assets attributable to US wind business, offset by assets of disposal group classified as held for sale, and lower borrowings due to reclassification of the global facility and Union Bank debt related to the sale of the US wind business. This concludes the financial results part of the presentation, and I now hand back to Miles for FY16 guidance and the outlook.
Thanks, Chris. Turning now to slide 18. Infogen expects wind conditions to improve in FY16, primarily because FY15 was anomalously below historical long-term average wind conditions. As a result, production in FY16 is expected to improve relative to FY15 performance, noting that weather patterns and wind conditions are by nature variable from year to year. Infogen has sought to manage the economic effect of this wind variability by entering into an innovative production hedging arrangement with Swiss Re that is expected to deliver more certainty to Infogen's revenue for the first three quarters of FY16. Excuse me. During FY16, Infogen will assess opportunities to extend its post-warranty service and maintenance agreements with third-party service providers to further reduce its exposure to the cost of turbine component replacements. A full-year contribution of contractual cost increases at the Capital Wind Farm and higher costs associated with higher production are expected to result in higher operating costs in FY16 of between $37.5 and $39.5 million. Infogen expects to repay approximately $35 million of global facility borrowings in FY16, in addition to the debt repayment associated with the sale of the US wind business. Turning to slide 19 for some thoughts on the medium-term outlook. The bundle price for LGCs and wholesale electricity has continued to strengthen, with upward pressure on LGC prices as a result of the looming shortfall in supply that will eventuate if new projects are not committed in the near term. With our current merchant exposure, Infogen's portfolio will benefit from these increasing prices, with each $1 increase in bundle prices adding approximately $1 million to Infogen's annual EBITDA. These stronger earnings will increase global facility debt repayments. At the same time, Infogen's development pipeline is well positioned to proceed to construction as opportunities emerge. Collectively, the two US sale transactions will result in Infogen's cash in excluded companies increasing to approximately $125 million. Residual FX exposure and the variability of earnings necessitates that Infogen retains a portion of these funds for the management of global facility covenant compliance. The normalised cash flow to equity from the Woodlawn Wind Farm is expected to be approximately $6 million per annum from FY17, or approximately 1 cent per security. During FY16, Infogen will assess its best opportunities to deploy its cash resources to achieve profitable growth and to improve total security holder returns. Turning to slide 20, the amended renewable energy target legislation requires 5 to 6,000 megawatts of new large-scale renewable energy capacity. Bundled prices are significantly higher than last year, as can be clearly observed in the charts on this slide that compare the 3 years of forward and future prices currently to what they were around 1 year ago. LGC prices have increased by $25 since December 2014. Infogen currently generates approximately 1 million merchant LGCs per annum that will benefit from these increases. LGC traded market prices have already risen to levels that should support new offtake contracts becoming available, but the contract market is relatively dormant, with liable parties considering how to best position themselves to meet their liabilities. Announcements of ageing thermal power plants withdrawing from the national electricity market have become more frequent, which should support wholesale electricity prices, and we have seen them pick up significantly in South Australia in recent months. Bloomberg New Energy Finance estimates the low to mid-range of levelised cost of new wind energy projects to be $80 to $95 per megawatt hour. While the bundled price is in excess of this, it is worth remembering that the LRET, or Large Scale Renewable Energy Target, is currently legislated to end in 2030. So new projects need to recoup LGC revenue in increasingly shortened timeframes to achieve reasonable investment returns. This should also keep upward pressure on LGC prices. Moving to slide 21, with the Australian earnings no longer required to support the US cash dip, the group leverage ratio will decrease rapidly over time. The chart on this slide shows a range to reflect that the actual outcomes will be subject to prevailing operating conditions. For a number of reasons, it's not currently desirable to raise equity to accelerate refinancing of the global facility. Refinancing the global facility becomes more achievable as the portfolio becomes more contracted because of the higher debt sizing available to contracted cash flows. Slide 22 includes a chart that we produce and update regularly, which shows the annual large-scale renewable energy targets and when we expect the existing surplus of certificates to be eliminated. A deficit is currently forecast for 2018, at which point liable parties would have to pay $65 for each certificate they are short to meet their liability. Because the shortfall price is not tax deductible, the effective economic cost to the liable parties is around $93 per certificate. Approximately 5,000 to 6,000 megawatts of new build capacity is required to meet the target, with a few hundred megawatts required to be completed by late this year or early 2016 to avoid the deficit in 2018. And approximately 1,500 megawatts of new capacity is required each year thereafter. Moving to slide 23. Of the 5,000 to 6,000 megawatts of new renewable energy capacity required to meet the large-scale renewable energy target, Infogen has an equity interest in approximately 1,200 megawatts of large-scale wind and solar sites, the vast majority of which have secured development approval. Many of these sites with current development approval will be required to satisfy the large-scale renewable energy target demand. Infogen's current capital constraints may limit our ability to fully participate in the growth window. While this persists, growth and value creation opportunities will be sought through sales of permitted and construction-ready development with potential to undertake an operator role for a new owner on completion, through an equity interest and operator role through joint ventures, and through 100% ownership of new capacity for smaller projects initially. We aspire to remain a leading renewable energy generator in Australia and will continue to pursue options that facilitate this. Turning to slide 24, sets out the key attributes of our wind and solar development pipelines and our assessment of the key factors that can support a new wind project in each state in Australia. We believe we have a well-diversified pipeline that will maximise the potential to exploit regional opportunities, including state and territory-sanctioned renewable energy tenders. Thank you. That concludes our formal presentation, and I'd now like to open the lines for questions, please.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from David Leitch with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, Miles. Just a couple of questions. I haven't had a chance to go through all the numbers. Can you advise what the pro forma net debt number is in A$ now?
742 as at 30th of June.
740, you're gone.
And we've got that's the group number.
Right, and then I guess...
David, just to complete that answer. So that's at 30th of June, and then, as we mentioned, we'll receive an additional $95 million of cash from those sales. So after that, the net debt will be $647 million.
So that's $95 million that stays within the group as opposed to going to the Global Facility Group.
That's right. So and then... For want of a better number, the EBITDA from the Australian businesses after the overhead is at current REC prices, probably $100 million is a number that a very casual number. I mean, it could be 10 either way, sort of thing.
That was
so. I calculate about 6.5 times debt to EBITDA or something. Is that one way of thinking about it?
Yeah, those numbers are pretty reasonable, David.
And then I just wanted to ask a more general question about the outlook for wind farms in Australia. I've spoken to all the major retailers, Origin, AGL, well, not to Energy Australia, to ERM, and I don't get the sense that any of them is in the slightest bit interested in sponsoring a new wind farm at the right this very second. On the other hand, the window for signing PPAs gets narrower because you only get the prices up to 2030. I just wondered how you see the sort of competitive, how's it going to, what's going to happen? What are your thoughts?
Okay, so when the legislation was amended, one of the positive things was the removal of the biennial review mechanism. There was also a statement that there would be no further review of the large-scale renewable energy target scheme until 2020. So if you can assume that the scheme continues, then the consequence of the scenario that you painted, which we don't disagree with, is that merchant LGC prices will continue to rise substantially, as they have been shown in the charts on the forward prices, until such time as the obligated parties are paying much higher prices than even now. At some point, those parties will be incentivised to contract. It's clearly not yet, but at some point, given the trajectory of the surplus that we're showing, unless they all want to be paying the penalty price, which I very much doubt, they will have to do something. And I fully understand your point that in discussions with them, that the big three obligated parties in particular, they're in no hurry to contract now, but it would not be in their interests or in their customers' interests for them to continue to pay merchant prices which are well in excess of what we or other renewable energy developers would contract for supply. I fully understand their position about on one side of their customer book they have customers who only have 2 or 3 year contracts, and yet on the other side of their book they're being pushed into signing contracts of, you know, perhaps 10 years duration to underwrite new projects. But that is the legislation. They are the parties who have the obligation. They have to figure out how they're going to resolve it. One of the and the last point I'll just make on that is that the government is not oblivious to this issue, and in fact have appointed the Clean Energy Regulator to monitor the behaviour of the obligated parties under the amended legislation to ensure, effectively to ensure, that there is no buyer's strike, so to speak. The Clean Energy Regulator is due to report to the government on that in April of next year. So, and the Clean Energy Regulator is already currently active in investigating what's going on in the market. So, you know, we have legislation in place. The big retailers and smaller ones are obligated by law to comply with that legislation. In my opinion, it's only my opinion, they eventually will do that.
And, of course, as you point out, they simply say that they've got enough RECs for their mass market and they'll just let the industrial customers look after themselves. I guess the point here is that you, at the moment, you're not aware that any... it doesn't sound like any PPAs are going to get signed by anyone, say, over the balance of this calendar year.
I guess in discussing this with, you know, with various people, what we've suggested is that the time frame could be the sort of 6 to 18 months, maybe a little bit longer time frame. Is somewhere in that time frame we expect that the retailers will start to do something. Signing up something before the end of this calendar year, I agree, looks unlikely given the attitude they have at the moment. To your point about C&I customers not being properly serviced by the obligated parties if they don't meet their commitments, I suppose, you know, there is another alternative, which is that renewable energy developers and owners and operators like ourselves go directly to those customers of the retailers and seek to negotiate contracts with them. That's something that we're looking at as well. But the fundamental requirement is that, particularly given the uncertainty that's been created by the Renewable Energy Target Review, investors and lenders are going to want to know that there is reasonable certainty before they're going to commit. You'll see a little bit of merchant plant going in, but not very much, in our opinion. And what's happening in the early stages is you're seeing the non-RET incentives driving the market, the schemes that have been put in place by the ACT government, and more recently the Victorian and Queensland governments seeking to purchase either their own requirements or to effectively to incentivise renewable energy investment by other means.
Yes, I've seen all that. And just finally, it looks to me like the wind developers are a very fragmented and poorly capitalised sector, and therefore they don't have much relative bargaining power. I sometimes think if some of the wind farm developers worked more as a group and could develop the odd wind farm on a merchant basis, and maybe just even offer the RECs out to the industrial market on an auction basis. I guess that's for another time. I'll probably all the questions I have for the moment. Thanks.
No, thanks, David. But we have thought about that concept as well. Of course, if the industry is to develop along those lines, and that is more merchant plant being built, that will require a different financing structure to that which has been more typical in the past, with lower level of gearing and various other things that will actually increase the cost of the producing the product. But it may well be that part of the market goes that way, and we're certainly thinking about how we might participate if that's the way the market does go.
Thanks.
Thank you. Once again, it's star one on your telephone to register for a question. We are showing no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. George for any closing remarks.
Okay, look, I might just give one more opportunity for anybody on the phone who'd like to ask a question before we wrap up. Is there any other questions?
There are no questions at the moment.
Okay, well, thank you very much for participating this morning, and I look forward to meeting with you in our discussions during this week. Thank you and good morning.